Bane, reel 4.
That's what we were doing. And so we just, once we thought that, the, or knew that we were completely in under this German trench that we wanted, then we started and got explosives up and charged up the place and then stood back and had a poop off.
I imagine one of the problems that you must have had with tunnels that were so small was in actually getting the earth diggings out of the hole.
Yes, well, to be put into sandbags and hauled out by sandbags to make as little noise as possible. And it was just all hand labour, dragging them out and then carrying this away probably 100 yards away from the entrance,
mm-hmm.
dumping into old shale mm-hmm. holes mm-hmm. and things.
Mm-hmm.
And then just after we were getting on fine at that, and then we were being moved and a section of New Zealand miners were attached to us. And they were excellent fellows, grand workers, but as brave as lions. They all wanted to go over the top to get at the Germans. They didn't care about digging underneath. They wanted to get into them.
Mm.
And at that time, the chief mining officer from the War Office came over, and I was sent for to divisional headquarters, and this old boy said to me, you're a mining engineer? And I said, yes. BSc in Glasgow mining. I said, yes. He said, well, I'd like you to join the Royal Engineers to take charge of a tunnelling company. He said, you're a second lieutenant just now. And I said, yes, sir. He said, well, you'll be a major in a tunnelling company right away and carry on. He said, what about it, would you transfer? I said, no. He said, why? I said, because I'm a territorial. I said, I've come with those men who are all from my own home district and they're all, I said, I couldn't desert them. Mm.
That's what you meant by the family atmosphere
Earlier.
Yeah.
I said, I couldn't desert them and I wouldn't like them to desert me.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, but you sure, look at the promotion you would get and what's a better job. I said, well, I'd much rather stay with the men that I'm with.
Mm. You described last time we spoke this tunnelling job as the most dangerous one you ever had.
Yes, because one never knew when it was going to be a collapse, the tunnel falling in, or the Germans were, if they had put up a mine when we were in there, everybody in the tunnels would have been wiped out. Mm.
Was detonation always timed to coincide with a major attack?
Well, it was usually timed to be just about dawn, just about stand to time, because the Germans were lining their trenches at that time too, you see.
Mm.
One of the mines was blown up, made a hole that would easily contain about 10 haystacks, give you an idea of, and it went up, you see, and then left, and then there was a great rush always to occupy the side of that mine crater that was advancing into the enemy line all the time.
Good. You described the winter of 1916-1917 as the worst you experienced in France. Why was that?
Mud, cold, and for weeks we were up to the thighs in mud, and when we were moving forward to the trenches, any of the shell holes were filled up with muddy clay, and if a man fell into that, he couldn't get out, and there was something drowned in mud. There was nothing could be done about it.
Can you give me any other examples of the sort of problems the severe winter created?
Well,
any other examples like them?
Yes, well,
shell holes.
The worst period we had was at a place called Cuth Salate, where the mud was so dreadful there, and we were drawn out of that and were sent down to the coast for a rest period. And when we came out of the trenches, we had to march back about 50 or 60 miles to get down to this place on the coast. I've just forgotten the name of it, at the mouth of the Somme. And it was during very severe frost, and the river, the mouth of the Somme and the sea were all frozen up. It was just like the North Pole. And we were all wearing kilts at the time, and everybody in the Highland Division had terrible chilblains in the knees. They were all red flesh, and the only bandages available were khaki-coloured first aid kit, and everybody had their knees wrapped up in those brown, filthy-looking bandages. And it really was a sorrowful sight for a time, and until we got sort of settled down and things healed up again.
Mm. Was your condition made it any more difficult by inadequacies in your equipment or clothing? You mentioned the kilts, that's what put the question in my mind.
Well,
were there any other deficiencies?
For a time after that, we were told to wear trousers, just trousers instead of kilts. And but the kilt was always the favourite thing for the Highland Division.
Mm.
But it was simply the extreme weather and the filthy conditions that caused a kilt getting mud on it and flapping against your legs. You can just imagine the discomfort.
Mm. Now, it was about this time, I think, that you were involved in the Battle of Pearl Capel.
Well, yes, that was when I think I probably mentioned about the overhead machine gun fire.
Yes, well, I assume you've never told me anything, and tell me exactly what you remember of that particular operation.
Well, this was at Pearl Capel. We were lined up, the 154 Brigade, the 9th Royal Scots were to advance first and take the front line from the Germans, and then we were the support battalion to go and take the second line. Well, at that time, artillery ammunition was in very short supply. The field guns were only allowed about 20 rounds a day.
Mm.
Well, to put down an efficient barrage required about 20 rounds a minute throughout the whole day. And of course, it was just a pop, 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 and nothing else. You see, doing not making a breakthrough in the enemy wire or anything. So, the Highland Division had just drawn in all the machine guns from the various battalions and formed a machine gun battalion. And somebody had the bright idea: the machine guns could give overhead fire to allow the attack to go on when we haven't the artillery ammunition. So that was all organised, and the attack duly took place. But the 9th Royal Scots went over, but here the machine guns opened up, but they were firing short and were firing into the backs of the 9th Royal and practically wiped out the whole of that company. And they came back, you see, and said that they couldn't advance because they were being shot from behind. So they got the hold of the machine gun battalion lot, and it was a present. Douglas Wimberley, who was commanding the Highland Division in the last war, he was a forward observation officer for the machine gunners at that time. He was in the Camerons. And he was whistled up and was told to stop their machine. Oh, he said the tripods, whenever they opened fire, they sunk in the mud and depressed the muzzles, and that's why they were shooting. But then they ought to have seen that, you see. So the 9th Royal Scots, they simply couldn't go on, but as support battalion, we went on then without machine guns at all, and got right on. But it was just sheer, well, it had never been tried before, and it was a complete failure.
Mm.
But we never wanted overhead machine gun fire again.
I'll bet. Now, from the end of 1916, right up to the armistice, you had a variety of staff appointments. First as captain and adjutant with the 7th Argyles, and then at the beginning of June of 1917, you moved over to 154 Brigade as assistant staff captain. I'd like you to tell me something about the sort of duties you carried out. You mentioned one, for example, supply work, that you were responsible for obtaining supplies for the brigade. Well, what did that involve exactly?
Well, getting indents in and making sure that if we had any surplus in any other unit, we could pass them on to keep all the units more or less in conformity. Sometimes we had a surplus ammunition in one area, you see, which we could disburse amongst the other battalions.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, it was a question of food was the important thing, getting the food supplies up, food and clothing, and ammunition supplies when it came, preparing for any attacks that were coming on. Ammunition had to be stored up in certain places, and also surplus food supplies there too.
Were there any